Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs for an audience of ambitious upstarts. And check me out. I'm wearing a jacket into the office here today. Alex,
hey.
The reason I'm wearing my jacket is,
yeah. Good
to see you, by the way. I usually on Thursdays don't record interviews, but I said, you know, I'll work a little bit from home, which I don't love doing, but it was a nice morning. And then I'll take one of the local bikes. I'll rent. I don't even have to pay to rent it. I pay an annual fee to be able to ride a Ford bike whenever I want. I said, I'll ride one of those into the office. I'll make it in time. So I get out there. I look for one. I couldn't freaking find one. I say, great. This is San Francisco. We have jump bikes. You know, the ones that everyone hates because they're dockless. I'll get on one of those. Couldn't find any one of those. I said, I can't walk. I got to rush in here. I don't want to be late. I said, you know, let's get on a moped. So I have another subscription to some service where I can take a moped whenever I wanted. I jumped on one of those mopeds and I made it over here. And I'm like a motorcycle dude here in San Francisco. I had a great entry into the day. So I feel like I'm shot out of a cannon. And the reason I'm doing this is, Alex, I feel like you don't know what to say as I'm saying this. It's totally fine.
I'm just listening. Sounds
exciting. The reason I'm doing this is you're in freaking Siberia. If I don't record with you today while you're here in the U.S., in New York, I might miss my opportunity to cover your story. And I really want my audience to hear it. When are you going back to Siberia?
Next week.
Okay. And is what's Siberia like, by the way, before I fully introduce you?
Well, actually, Siberia is not that many people think of it. We have a regular city, 500,000 people, streets, cars, houses. But the very difference is, though, that we have a really long winter. It could be up to 6 months long and a lot of snow. But on summer, it's really hot. You can swim. And it's beautiful. So it's not that different. But, you know, when you say that you are from Siberia, you get a credit, like what you just mentioned. And it helps a little bit. But also, you are really far away from tech. So it's a disadvantage.
I get that. I always felt like Siberia is where they would throw people when they didn't want them around, when they did something wrong. Isn't that true? Wasn't that part of what happened?
It used to be maybe 200 years ago. But now it's just a
distant. Not even in the Soviet Union, they wouldn't send people to Siberia when they did something wrong?
No, I don't recall that.
No.
Maybe they did that.
All right, cool. For me, it kind of puts a little bit more of an urgency around doing this interview, not because of Siberia, but because you're in Russia. When I have friends who go to Russia, it's murder to try to connect with them because our hours are upside down. Anyway, I should introduce you. So Alex is Alex Kistinev. He created this chatbot that I've been just watching on Product Hunt so much. Here's what it does. You know how when you're working with a remote team, and maybe even with a team that's all in the same office, it's kind of hard to check in with people and see what they're up to. It's hard to understand what is that guy doing over there and how, if I know about it, how does everyone else get to know about it? Well, what Alex did is he created a bot that works within the Slack chat app. And what the bot does is it checks in with people and says, hey, what are you up to? And the series of questions that you could ask. And then everybody who needs to can hear those answers. And he thinks of it as a way of managing meetings asynchronously. Alex, how do you feel I did with that?
Totally correct.
And okay, good. I'm watching your face to get a sense. And I know that you've got more in this product and more to say about it. And I wanted to make sure that I introduced it right. All right, we're going to find out how he's doing this, how he was able to build this without any outside funding, the clever way that he's getting users to sign up for this, and so much more thanks to two phenomenal companies. The first will help you do your email marketing and other automated marketing right. It's called ActiveCampaign, and the second will host your website. It's called HostGator, and I'll tell you guys about all those later. Alex, first, let's give people a sense of the size of the company. What's your revenue?
Right. So our current revenue is about $30,000 per month, and we hit profitability maybe 6 months ago. So our costs are lower than how much are we making, and you know, it feels so exciting to be profitable. Because it's kind of provide you enough flexibility and freedom to choose whatever you want.
But it's just how profitable are you guys now?
Maybe 10K above our costs.
Impressive. 10K, how many people on the team?
Seven people.
Okay. All in Russia?
Yep.
Okay. Cool. You lived in the Bay Area, though, for a little bit, didn't you? Working on a startup?
Yeah. That was true.
What do you think about living in San Francisco with tech startups all around you?
Well, it's so awesome. And I dreamed that I can come back. And so our current company, I think will allow me to move back to United States for a while or for some time, because it's so amazing to be near people with great ideas, with experience. So, for example, now I'm in New York, and it's such a big difference for me to be surrounded by people, by like-minded people. So this is the thing that I miss in Siberia. Even though it's my native town, and there are a lot of great things about it, but, you know, very, very few companies are working on a startup there. So the problem is that you can't talk to someone to compare how you are doing or to get an advice. And yeah, even if you would like to have a call with someone from San Francisco, there are time differences. Such a makes it very inconvenient. So living in the Bay Area is awesome, I would say.
Yeah. And you know, truthfully, I feel like some of the best ideas come when you're not sitting around trying to come up with them, when you're just shooting the shit with someone about what's going on in their lives. And then they tell you about something clever that they're working on that doesn't seem important enough yet, but they're excited by. That's when living in the Bay Area is exciting. All right. You were running a company called Talk O'Clock back in 2011 in the Bay. You're smiling as I say, what was Talk O'Clock?
I'm smiling because, like, you know everything about me, but let's talk about it. So back in the days, we found a company that was doing...
Oh, I just lost you. Let's give it a second. And if the connection doesn't come back, we're going to have to reconnect.
You said that the alarm clock?
Sorry, I lost your connection. You were saying back in the day, you were looking at a company that did what? This was a Russian company that did what?
Yeah, so they did a product which was a social alarm clock. So you set an alarm clock, and in the morning, you'll be waking up by a stranger phone call.
Just a random person calling you up and saying, hey, Alex, you wanted me to wake you up at 6? It's 6, get out.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this was in Russia? Was it doing well back then?
Yes, it was in Russia, and they were doing really well. And so we thought of, we can make the same product and launch it for the whole of the world, and it will be a global company. So within 1 month, we launched iOS, Android applications, and web app with the same technology, but focusing on global market. And so I came to Bay Area to present it on different conferences, talk to people, maybe find funding. And you know what? I found that while in Russia, people treated it like, oh, that's so awesome. In America, people were like, oh, it's a creepy idea. I don't want to be waken up by a stranger. But even though we got, I think, 20,000 users signed up for our service, we got hundreds of calls a day. And they were mainly people from India talking to anyone about random things. It was not like for waking people up, cheering them up in the morning. It was more like a just chatting service for random people. But the costs were really high, like for infrastructure, for having all those calls.
After, was it actual phone calls that you were making, or was it voice over IP?
Yeah, sure, it was voice over IP.
And even there, the infrastructure costs were too expensive.
Yeah, like I don't recall the exact numbers, but I think it was way more dozen of thousands of dollars.
Way more than how much?
20,000, 30,000, something like that.
20,000 a month?
I think it was, I don't remember. It was 6 years ago, but it was...
But just to give me a sense, you're saying over $10,000 a month. Where did that money come from?
So we got another project going on, and that's how it helped us to invest that money into that startup.
What was the other project that was producing revenue for you?
Oh, that was so many different stuff we were working on, like affiliate marketing, sales stuff, working on other clients. So we did a bunch of different things without having one single thing to focus on, which, how we are working at the moment. And, I was always dreamed to find a great idea, to focus all my efforts on that idea, and to build a startup from the scratch. And so that's why I founded Talk O'Clock. And it didn't take off.
You know, let me take a moment. I want to understand what happened with Taco Clock, but the fact that you could actually go out there and start to produce $10,000, $20,000 in profit a month and allow yourself to invest it in a new idea is kind of interesting to me. So let me understand this. You were doing some work for clients, doing what, mobile apps or web design?
Websites, presentations, mobile apps, different things.
Everything from mobile apps to like PowerPoint presentations?
It sounds like this, but it was not like we had different projects. Maybe we had one project for mobile app, one project for website.
It's just whatever work you could get, you'd say, sure.
Right,
yes.
Right,
and how would you get your clients? Upwork?
No, it was within Russia. It was within Russia, finding clients, using people I know. But mostly, we didn't focus on that work.
Because, tell me about the affiliate thing, too. You're also generating money from affiliate programs. What did you sell through affiliate programs? I see that smile. Most people, when they're doing it, don't like to admit what it is. Now that it's been a few years, tell me what it was that was producing that kind of money.
It was more than 10 years ago. And it was like some clothing, I don't even remember what was that.
Was it pills? Was it like little blue pills? No.
I know that.
Huh? Cologne?
What is that?
You're saying it was cologne that you were selling, you think?
I don't know.
No, I thought you said cologne. You don't remember
any of the products? I said clothing.
Clothing.
Yep.
Clothing did well?
Andrew, it was so long time ago, then we switched to SEO, then we switched to clients work and built some tiny products that generated cash for us. But those projects, they are so well spread.
Yeah.
And so that it didn't feel like you are doing something meaningful. Like we could make something out of there, something there. Then in 2 months, it went away. So that's why for years I was working to find a great idea, a great startup, great problem that we can solve. And that's how within years, I was thinking about what should I say to you when you ask me those questions? What was I working on? And it wasn't really like something niche or vertical where we dive deeper and found insights. It was like spreading all our efforts into different verticals. And you know what? I found that it doesn't work. When you focus on your efforts 100% on one vertical, one niche, or one problem for a long period of time, it pays off. Like with what we are doing at the moment, we spent 3 years in a chatbot space. And it took us 2 years to get revenue. And it took us 1 year to learn where we shouldn't go for. And that's what matters a lot, I suppose.
Yeah, you know what? I've been watching you from the outside because you're so good at being present in my world. You know, the world of startups who love software, who are curious about what, who love Slack and love, what is it? The whole agile movement. You're just so in our world. I can't stop seeing you guys. I wouldn't have been surprised if you sat here and you said, Andrew, we're $250,000 a year because you're so present in my world. I assumed you're way bigger. And I get what you're talking about. That focus is what lets you feel omnipresent to people like me. You started telling me why the software didn't work out. And I said, let's hold on to it and we'll come back to it. I think now's the time to talk about it. Why do you think that it didn't work out?
You mean that Taco Clock?
Yeah, Taco Clock. Why not?
So it wasn't solving a real problem. People or on Taco Clock, and I mentioned that we had, I think, over 25,000 users. They were there just for fun, for entertaining themselves. That kind of problem could be solved, but there wasn't really a problem for waking people up in the morning by a random phone call. And so when we found that, we understood that even if we grow that company bigger, even if we move to some niche, like, I don't know, maybe even dating or whatever, we won't be able to have either revenue or have retention or whatever to spend years of our time working on that. So that's why we decided to just stop it and move to the next idea.
What was the next idea?
That was... That wasn't that smart, actually, but let me tell you about it.
Yeah.
So we had an infrastructure for voice over IP calls. So I got an idea, and I have sometimes too many crazy ideas. But that was the craziest one, I suppose. So I found that there is a problem of taking medicine by elderly people. And sometimes they forget to take medicine, and it costs a lot. And people, it's not good for people. So we used our Talk O'Clock infrastructure to connect parents with their children to remind them about taking medicine. Like, you set up a regular phone call at, say, let's say 5 o'clock, that connects you to your mother, and you say, "Oh, Mom, could you take that pill? Don't forget, it's important." And it didn't work out.
It didn't work out. Why do you think that one didn't work out?
Because I didn't know anything about this niche, that this market, that problem. And because I didn't push too hard. Like, we just gave it 2 or 3 months, and that's it. And that mistake was following me for quite some time. And it goes back to focus and hard work over the months and years.
And so if you could go back in time, first of all, you probably wouldn't get into that space, but if you were to do it right, it would be about spending more time talking to kids who would call the children who would call their parents, the parents who would need the phone calls, understand their problem, understand their motivation, see if you could find a problem that your software could solve. That's what you do.
Something like that. And it would be even better to get someone on board who is in this space or who felt that problem, because it was only me who found it on the internet without any insights about it.
So this was you doing it alone. You didn't have a co-founder?
Not at the time.
Okay. All right. Let me take a moment, talk about my first sponsor, and then we're going to get back into your story and the thing that happened when you discovered Telegram and their chatbot API that changed everything for you. All right. My first sponsor is a company called ActiveCampaign. Here's the thing. Email marketing is something that most people do wrong. And frankly, I've done wrong for most of my career. What you do is you say, "Hey, I know that email is going to work. It's the best way for me to reach out to my current customers or potential customers. I'll just put a form on my site collecting email addresses. Maybe even I give people something if they give me their email address, and then I'll email them." And the problem with that is it sounds great and it does work at first. The problem with it, though, is you don't want to email everyone the exact same thing. You want to take a moment to understand, what are they about? What issues do they have? Let's say maybe even segment them. Here's a basic segmentation. You might actually, once somebody buys, stop sending them email trying to get them to buy and offering them discounts, which makes you look like a knucklehead. Or if you start to see that they're on a part of your website that's geared towards enterprise customers, maybe you don't tell them that you have a $9.95 intro offer, but instead you start sending them email that tells them, "We have a call. You can talk to our founder," or, "We have a phone number that you can use to talk to our sales department." Whatever you would send to an enterprise customer that you wouldn't send to somebody who's just looking at the free version of the site or is looking at the part of your site that's geared towards new companies. Get what I mean? How do you segment, though? How do you segment based on what people have done on your site, what they have done with you as a business, whether they bought or not bought? Well, it used to be really tough. Most people used to give up on it, or they'd start to spend a lot of money on software and a lot of money on people to do the software right. It's not anymore. ActiveCampaign will make it a snap. I promise, if you're at all interested in this and you could see how segmenting your audience based on what they've done on your site, if you could see how that would increase your sales and you're all hesitant, I promise if you go to activecampaign.com/mixergy, you will easily understand this and see that you can implement it. And if not, walk away. You got nothing to lose. Because when you go to activecampaign.com/mixergy, they're going to give you a free month. Then if you decide to sign up, if you say, "Hey, you know what? This really is easy. I could do it myself. I can hand it to my virtual assistant. I can hand it to my dopey brother-in-law who decided that he's going to be working with me and can't really handle software. I'm going to give it to him." You're going to see that you can give it to these people and they'll manage it really right, because ActiveCampaign is built for simplicity, very powerful software that's built for simplicity. If you decide after you try the free version that you like it, your second month is going to be free, and they're going to give you 2 free coaching calls with their experts who will make sure that you use this to its full potential. And if you signed up for one of the knucklehead pieces of software out there that doesn't have this power and you don't want to move over, they'll even migrate you for free. Alex, is that a great offer or what?
Sounds really exciting. We don't have too many users at this point, but I imagine that if you have like more than 1,000 emails, then it would be really useful to split them in different categories.
activecampaign.com/mixergy. What do you mean you don't have enough? What do you use for your email?
We don't. Our email list is maybe 2,000 people.
Stan Upley, I'm gonna go to your website right now. Let me do a quick analysis of your thing. Okay, you have a button here that says add to Slack. If I don't want to add it to Slack right away, let me see. I could request a demo. No, you're not asking for an email address at all. What's up with you?
It's on my to-do list. You know, we are a small team, so we are not capable of doing all things at once. And this is what we are up to.
Here's what I think you need, because you guys are really good at creating content. I would suggest what you do is 10 keys for managing an agile meeting right. You just put together a list of the top 10 things. You guys study this freaking agile thing more than anybody else I know. Well, you do it a lot, right?
Yeah.
Anyone who wants it enters their email address. Then what you do is you put a little bit of code from ActiveCampaign on your site, and you start to see what people are doing, and then you figure out how you can start to customize. Look at this. You guys don't do that at all.
That's a good piece of advice.
Then you start to teach people from time to time the questions that work well, how they could use Stand Uply. All right, but it's on your to-do list. You can't do everything. I get it. All right.
Yeah, and I won't forget it since it's recorded on our interview.
I think it could be really powerful for you.
All right. Okay.
Telegram comes out with their chatbot API 2016, and you say what?
I think it was 2015. And when Telegram, they released their APIs for chatbots, I thought it was huge. And so I offered my partner and co-founder at Stand Uply, Artyom, to build something in the field of Telegram. And we decided to start from just a web catalog of bots and build some tiny bots to just to check out what's happening there. And we had a huge list of ideas, from fun ideas to some very complicated ideas, what we can build up on Telegram.
Alex, just to be clear,
within months.
I'm sorry, our connection's laggy a little bit. But just to be clear, you said, hey, this chatbots are now allowed on Telegram, which is a chat app that's focused on privacy. I think we need to come up with some idea, and you started brainstorming ideas and looking for the one that you would go for, right?
Yeah.
And then the first thing that you came up with was what?
So first we had a list of like dozens of different chatbots, but we decided to build a web catalog for bots that were on Telegram.
Why? Why was that the first thing that you wanted to start out with?
We decided to do that to understand the users, to understand the demand, and to see where just it goes.
Because if you start to see that an item in your list is suddenly super popular or a type of item is popular, you'll understand this is the type of bot that we might want to create for ourselves, right?
Right. You know what?
Yep.
Like 90% of our users, 90% of our users were looking for porn, and they're like,
"Oh, really? They were looking for porn bots?"
Yes.
Interesting. Okay, so you didn't get the type of data that you're looking for. All right. So then you said, but
and moreover, we also found that like 60% or maybe 50% were coming from Arabic countries and especially from Iran, and like we were so far away from them in terms of language barriers and in terms of culture, different cultures. So we found that it was complicated to build some product, some huge business idea, or just a business on Telegram. And then we decided, okay, let's move on. Let's build an advertising platform for bot developers on Telegram. Maybe it will take off. So we launched a landing page. It was featured on VentureBeat. We got several hundreds of bot developers and advertisers. And we started manually doing all this stuff. Like it is a big ad platform. And what we found that user retention rate was so low. I can give you an exact example that one of the most popular bots, it has 100K installs and a couple hundred active users a day.
And right. You know what? That's still an issue, but less now than it was back then. So, right. So you're saying, look, if these guys can't get people to keep using their chatbots, then how am I going to start to sell ads to those users? Right?
Yeah, absolutely. And also Telegram had, I don't know as for now, but it had some other challenges for bot developers. Like we couldn't get any data about our users, like their platform. We couldn't even target advertising towards iOS users or Android users. And with all of those challenges I mentioned, we decided that it won't work for us. So we won't be able to build a viable business on Telegram.
You know, I should probably just explain to our listeners what a bot is, a chatbot is. I think most of them know, but just in case, a chatbot is simply software that interacts with people inside of a chat application. So for example, I'm looking at the early version of Bot Family. That's your collection of chatbots. You guys had something called My Poker Bot that would allow people to play poker within a chatbot. There was Wolfram Alpha's chatbot, which allowed people to ask or search for anything within chat, just like they would on the web, but do it within the Telegram app. Let me see if I could find another one. Al Jazeera had a chatbot with a feed of their breaking news stories. So if you didn't want to go to their website, but just get the news alert sent to you via chat, you can get that. And so your vision was, look, all these people are going to start to build an audience. They're going to want to monetize it. People aren't paying for access to these bots. What if we can run some ads? Maybe after like 7 Al Jazeera news stories, we can run one ad and link people out to that advertiser. And you have a good point. First of all, there wasn't enough activity in chatbots on Telegram. And number two, you couldn't get enough data on them. So not everyone who's in Al Jazeera is interested in, I don't know what, the same type of clothing if you're going to run a clothing affiliate program in there. All right. So I see what you were up against. And then you said, you know what? Maybe it's Telegram. And I believe it is Telegram. I don't think that the Telegram platform is meant for something like this. People use Telegram because they want privacy, because they want more of an intimate connection, right?
Yeah, maybe. So we skipped Facebook. And I know that you built or you're still building bots for Facebook. Is it the same?
Yeah, we've got a site called Bot Academy where we train people to create chatbots on the Facebook Messenger platform, and people hire our graduates all the time through us. Yeah, we ended up going for Facebook Messenger. You went in a different direction. What platform did you build on?
So we chose Slack as our next platform, and been working on Slack for 2 years now.
What drew you to Slack as a platform for creating chatbots?
I heard a lot about Slack, and when we were discussing where to go next, we decided to choose B2B and to go for some potentially useful use cases. And my partner and co-founder, Artem, he is really into project management. He teaches project management classes. He has a lot of insights of problems with agile teams. And so he proposed, let's build a chatbot that solves those problems with agile teams, with remote teams, that will... And so I said, yeah, that's a great idea. Let's do that. And that's how we made it to Slack.
So now you finally are working on a project that's built for people that you know well, because you guys have worked with those people. Not so much you, but Artem has worked with those people. So you understand the problem, you understand the needs, you understand their language. I can see how this is a world different from talking to grandparents and parents who aren't taking their medication.
Absolutely. That's correct.
What's sprinterbot.com?
It was an MVP that our first version. Mm-hmm. Then we changed our name second time, and then we changed our names third time to Stand Up. So we experimented for for 6 months with different value propositions, different names, different versions, and eventually came up with the Stand Up concept.
When you guys were Sprinterbot, the first version, I'm looking at an early version. It says, your in-house Scrum Master in Slack. Scrum Master is a term from Agile, from Scrum, right? A way of, how do I describe Scrum? It's a way of managing projects with short deadlines and a specific way of doing things, right? Like coming up with stories and...
Yes, something like that.
Okay. And so can you describe to me in layman's term what the bot did when it was called Sprinter Bot?
Sure. So on Scrum, you work using iterations. It can be 1 week, 2 weeks, or several week iterations when you have to finish all your tasks within that iteration. So SprinterBot asked you for a goal of that iteration. So it ran stand-up meetings with your team during that iteration. And also in Scrum teams, they use story points instead of hours to evaluate tasks. So Scrum Master tracked story points of teams, showing them how they proceed from like a large number of story points to zero when everything is done. And everything was done within Slack. And it was kind of complicated because you have different setups. And when you do this all using slash commands and via typing, like many people said that the best interface is no interface and typing when chatbots emerged. And we found that it's not the right thing. Some things should be done using commands, buttons, but some things can be done using text interface.
Yeah, you know what? That's always been, in the early days, that was my problem with chatbots on Slack. I'd have to remember commands, or I could hit slash and then something and then list the commands. And it really felt like going back in time to Microsoft DOS days, where if you remembered the command, then you could access the function you wanted. But if you couldn't, you were just kind of stuck there. And I could see how that was an issue. I also feel like the early version with points, with the team's mood, with all the other stuff that you were trying to gauge from Slack was just a little too complicated, right? No.
Well, maybe it was more our vision. Not all those features were in place. Maybe it was complicated, yeah. But eventually we made a circle and we turned back to being a digital Scrum Master and working towards building that. But it was, so we started from a very tiny thing that Sprinter bought. Did very well. It's running stand-up meetings for remote teams. Then we built a product stand-uply that was focused on stand-up meetings. And as we delivered that feature, we started rolling out new features towards building a digital assistant for Slack teams.
Wait, so what is the difference then between SprinterBot and stand-uply feature-wise?
I think that from SprinterBot that you are looking for it right now using archive.org
yep.
And stand-uply at the moment, from vision perspective, it's the same.
What about from a feature perspective, from what it did?
The difference is huge. First of all, we have all setups via web. It makes it easier to connect stand-uply to task trackers, to GitHub. It makes it easier to schedule your reports. You have so many different flexibility to set it up like you need. You won't be able to do that within Slack. And then in Slack, it works kind of similar way because a chatbot on Slack is like a real person. It can ask you questions. It can deliver you some kind of data. So from Slack perspective, I would say that they are mostly the same.
Okay. But from asking questions, it used to be that if I wanted to ask my team a regular question every single day, like what's your mood, I would have to write that question into Slack and structure it within Slack. And today on Stand-Uply, I just go to your webpage, I fill out a form, and I say, my first question is, hey, what's your mood, team, right?
Yes,
that's the difference.
Correct.
So it's a user experience change even though the vision is still the same?
Yes.
I'm wondering how you knew that. How did you know that people were too confused by your software? What kind of interaction did you have with people to understand that?
So we were just exploring how people used our product. We were exploring the funnel, like how many of them came to our product, how many of them started using it, how many of them continued to using it. And we understood that the funnel wasn't that good. For example, 50 teams came to our product, 10 teams started using it. Like, it wasn't good conversion rate, in our opinion.
And so then, did you call the other 40 to understand why they weren't signing up, or was it just trying to figure it out on your own?
We were trying to figure out it on our own.
Okay.
And so we decided that also we envisioned that it could be easier to manage the bot using web interface, and we built that, and we also built it to configure questions like you need them. So in the first version, bot was asking just predefined questions. It wasn't possible to change them. And so we decided that why don't we allow people to change those questions and to ask anything they want? And here comes the second version with a lot of mistakes if you want to ask me about them.
And Alex, what you're saying is you kind of saw, just as users of your own software, that it was too complicated to create the questions within Slack. You as a user of your own software were seeing where you were frustrated, and you understood this is probably where your users were getting frustrated. This is what you need to change. That's how you figured out how to iterate in the beginning?
Okay. Yes.
You know, the other thing you told our producer was, you said, look, people told us they don't follow Scrum strictly. They make their own version of it. How did you understand that? I'm trying to get a sense of how you picked up on user feedback.
So we talked to our users, but also we talked to other people. So we composed a list of Slack communities to talk to different people, and that's how we made it to large list. We recently published 2,000 Slack communities because we found that it's so exciting to...
Wait. You're saying you went into Slack communities to understand how people were using your software or how they were doing Scrum in general?
Just to make, to run customer development interviews in general.
So you go into Slack communities, you start to talk to people who are on Slack, you'd start to check in with them. What's one community that was especially helpful for you to learn from?
I don't remember exactly because they were...
What type of people did they have in it?
So we talked to project managers, and to everyone...
Within Slack?
Within Slack communities.
Okay. So from what I understand, you guys said, hey, you know what? People who are using Slack to run their companies are also members of other Slack groups to get to meet other people who are running their companies and running project management at their companies. Let's find all those Slack groups. Let's join them. Let's get to know the people who are in there. That's part of what you did, right?
Absolutely. And it was not right.
It was not what?
It was not right. It was a mistake.
Why? Why was that a mistake? It sounds brilliant.
You know what? So it sounds like obvious that that you just mentioned. But we had to talk to bot users. So maybe those people, they were... using Slack at their workplace, but probably they didn't use bots. And so when we approached them with questions, with ideas, they were like, bots, stand up meetings on Slack, we don't need that. It's a silly idea, or we won't pay for that. And we were like, are we on the right track? And we sat down with Artyom, and eventually, we decided that maybe we are just talking to wrong people. And after we published our application in Slack App Directory, where people come for Slack bots, where people are really using them, we started getting customers and users who felt and who feel that important for them. And maybe those two groups were project managers, but those project managers who come to Slack App Directory, they found our product useful. But other project managers who were not using Slack bots, they just felt stupid idea. But eventually, those people with whom we talked to came to stand up later on. Like we literally tracked some people that we were spoken to about our ideas and who didn't use bots and who thought that it was a stupid idea. After that, we found them on Standuply. It was really interesting.
Because what it sounds like is there was a period there where people were using Slack, but not yet comfortable with bots. And the people who were comfortable with bots were going only into the bot directory on Slack to look and explore and try things out. Okay. All right. I get it. I actually feel like Slack did a really good thing in the beginning by creating that directory of bots. And where Facebook Messenger is struggling is in creating the right type of directory. And I see they've been playing with it. I don't even think to this day that Telegram has a directory of bots. I think you have to just kind of know what's available. And by cultivating bots on their platform, it feels like Slack turned their chat application into a real platform for software makers like you. Okay. All right. I'm going to come back in a moment and talk about the different types of ads that you did, how you got users in there, and what was working beyond the directory, especially Product Hunt. What you did there was fantastic. And I'm going to be able to do it thanks to a company called HostGator. Do you know HostGator at all, Alex?
No.
You don't? All right. I'm going to break. Actually, I'm not really going to, I'm not going to rock your world with this. Here's what it is. It's simple. It's just hosting. Tons of different hosting companies out there. So why would anyone want to sign up for HostGator? Because they've been around for, what, almost two decades at this point? Because their software just works, and it's a low price. Did you guys build your website on WordPress?
No.
No, you didn't. You guys custom coded your website?
Yeah, sure. I think we used some framework. I don't remember what it was exactly. And we are hosting it at AWS.
Wow. See, I'm looking at it to see if maybe you're wrong. You're not at all wrong. You're absolutely right. That's kind of a pain in the butt to do, because you know what? If you decide that you want to add more pages, if you decide that you want to add a blog, you guys don't even have a blog on your site, do you? Do you have one?
Yeah, sure.
You do have a blog. So you guys custom wrote it yourselves?
Yep.
Okay, that is impressive and also kind of scary, because it feels like it's just a distraction. Why bother to build up your site? I keep telling you why to do things different than you're doing it, just because I want to tell you about my sponsor. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
Perfectly fine. If this is what you're comfortable with, host on AWS, on Amazon Web Services, totally fine. You'll get an inexpensive price. You'll be able to hand code the HTML for your site. It's impressive, and a lot of people do it. I don't. And the reason I don't do it is because I want a platform that's easy for me to use that lets me just forget about even creating my website. I just like hitting that one-click install of WordPress, knowing WordPress is up and running, finding a theme out there. Sometimes I pay a designer to improve it. Sometimes I just stick with what's there. Well, now I'm up and running. If I decide I need a new page so that I could have a form on my site, like I'll give you an example. I had a personal website. I decided I want a form for anyone who wants to come over for poker at my house so that I can collect some info on them. I just hit a button. I added the form, I'm good to go. That's one of the nice things about WordPress. Easy to use, easy to add to, and there's a community of people who keep improving it. So if you're going to host a WordPress website, like 31% of all websites now are hosted using WordPress, who do you get to keep your site running? For me, I highly recommend HostGator. HostGator just works. Starts out with a super inexpensive package. Really, one of the lowest in the business that will just work. And then as your business grows and you need more, they've got tons of other options, everything from a dedicated server to manage WordPress hosting to actually other things that aren't even on their website. But if you call them up, you let them know what you're looking for, they will grow. They will give you packages that grow with you. All right, here's a URL where you can get a super low price, get tagged as a Mixergy customer, and get a whole lot of other benefits. Go to HostGator.com/Mixergy. And when you use that URL, you get a low price and you'll also be supporting Mixergy. HostGator.com/Mixergy. All right. First place that you guys went to promote was BetaList, right?
Yep.
How did that do for you?
So we did it three times.
And, you know, that's what I freaking love about you. Beta list is all about getting beta users for your software. Most people will hit a site like that once and say, it was great, it worked. And then say, all right, we're not in beta anymore, we're done. You guys went back. So the first time you did it, was it work? Was it effective?
Yeah, it was. So the first time was the best one.
The best.
Yes.
Okay, so you went to beta list, you got a good hit. You went to Slack communities, you got a good hit. You went to social media. Did social media help you?
What do you mean by going to social media?
I'm looking here at my notes from your conversation with a pre-interviewer. You said you use Slack communities, you use social media. Tell me about them. Did that work? How did it work?
Yeah, sure. So we got 300 signups from beta list at the first time. Then, as I mentioned, we changed our name, so we were able to submit it to beta list again. So we got like maybe 100 signups. And when we found it Standupply, we also made it to beta list and got like another 100 of signups.
So you're saying every time you rebranded, you went back to beta list and got more signups. Is that right?
You know what? It comes back to my Siberian roots. So Siberian people who live in a very it's not really easy to survive here. So that's why we hustle a lot. And we also, as I mentioned, we didn't have any funding. So we had to find our way to get more users, to get users pay us. And that's why we launched 3 times on beta list, like dozens of time on Product Hunt. Did a lot of customer interviews. Like I did maybe 100 of customer interviews. To build the right product, to build a viable business. So it's just it.
You know what? I'm now looking at beta list. I forgot how good that website was until I read my notes on you in preparation. And then I went back and they improved that site so much over the years. It's another site where you go in and you see new products that are being built by people like you that... that for me is just kind of fascinating to see what people like, to see people's feedback on it, to see the products themselves. All right, so you went there, you started to get some results. When you went to Product Hunt, you tried a few other things beyond the rebranding. Every time you have a new version, you go back to Product Hunt and you list it and you get more traffic. What are the things that you do on Product Hunt that got you users? Again, Product Hunt is just a website where people launch products, get listed, users will vote on the ones that they like, and most makers like you will launch once and then be done. You, every time you upgrade, you get on there. What else did you do on Product Hunt to get attention?
Yeah, sure. So we found that some makers, they launched on Product Hunt several times. Like they have second version of their product, third version of their product, but also some makers launch different features of their products. So we decided, why don't we launch different features, the different major features of our product on Product Hunt? So every time we deliver something great and meaningful, we launch them on Product Hunt. For example, recently we thought of, why can't we send voice and video messages on Slack? Because when you communicate with remote team members, it's useful to just, for example, if you have something not for a meeting, but for a discussion, you can send a voice message or video message with information. And we did that with seamless integration with YouTube. And we launched it on Product Hunt. Community loved it. And that's the way it works. I suppose that if you delivered some meaningful feature to your product, why don't you let others know about it? So yesterday, we did another of our launch.
I see it right here. This is video standups automated by Standupply. Is that right?
Right.
That was just yesterday?
Yes.
Okay. And again, this is not an individual product. It's a feature of your product, but you launch it on there and you get a bunch of attention. In fact, it looks like you got 658 votes, which is a lot.
Yeah. Why not? We spread the word about it. Our partners of that product, daily.com. Also spread the word about it, and when you launch something on Product Hunt, so it's about the product quality and about your loyal user base. So the more you do it, the better you are at that.
Okay. Here's one that did especially well for you guys. 2,000 Slack groups. You launched that on Product Hunt. That one got 1,326 votes. And this is just a website, actually a page on your website with a collection of Slack groups.
Yes.
How did you get all these Slack groups?
Sometimes I'm asked this question, but there is no magic behind. So me and another team member from Standuply, we just search on Google for Slack communities, and we find all those Slack groups put together. And only within 4 months of work, you can get the same website up.
You're saying it's you guys just manually hunting them down and keeping a list?
Right. Not a problem for Siberian guys.
Because you'll spend hours and hours listening to music, I imagine, and just finding this stuff and putting it on a list.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow, man.
People get to know you without spending much time, much money on Facebook and Google Ads.
I'm surprised that you didn't pay someone on Upwork some money to just go out and follow some process and put the list together for you. But it's just you Googling and searching around and finding other lists and putting your own list together.
It's not only me personally, another team member helped us with that task.
All right, it was worth it. And then every time somebody comes to this site to look for a Slack group, they see that they could add Standuply to their own personal Slack. And so they're all potential customers.
Yeah, sure. So you can search for Slack groups on Google and you'll find us at the first place.
That's where I feel like, so you do have an email collection box and it says subscribe for updates, and nobody's going to subscribe for updates. Not nobody, but it's not really that compelling. But imagine if you said, had a list on that page of 10 ways to get the most use out of your Slack, or 10 Slack bots that will help you. No, that's not good, because most people on this are not, well, maybe 10 Slack bots that will help you be more productive with Slack, or ways to make Slack more useful for you. People on Slack are always bothered that it's too freaking noisy. Noah Kagan created a list of ways that he makes Slack more useful for him, something like that. I feel like
More
subscribers.
Maybe. Thanks.
Am I being a jerk by telling you all the things that you should be doing instead of shutting up and listening to you?
Well, it's really useful because, as I mentioned, nobody in Siberia does startup and all this stuff. So getting feedback from experienced guys like you, it's so amazing.
You know what? Before Standuply and after you created the first version, which was, what was that called again? Sprinterbox. Between Sprinterbox and Standuply, there was a site called Report Chef that you told our producer that was your lowest point. Why was that your lowest point?
Yeah, so it's an interesting story, though. We decided that we can allow our users to have and to build more workflows when they change the questions. So, for example, if you would like to choose where to go for lunch, you can run Standuply, or you could run a Report Chef to ask everyone on your team to choose a place, or you can run a survey, what would you buy for your team member on her birthday. And we thought, yeah, that's a cool idea. Let's make those questions customizable. And that's how we decided to change the name into Report Chef, like a chef that builds different reports based on recipes. It sounded like a cool idea, but people were struggling to understand what we were up to. And when we pitched that idea to different people, first we pitched to wrong people, but also the pitch wasn't compelling enough or wasn't clear enough. And also at the time, Slack bots were not so popular. And so we were not getting traction. And at some point we had maybe 30 or 40 active users, and that's it. And we were not growing. So I went to a conference in Europe to talk to people and to pitch that idea. And everyone I was approaching were like, I don't know, we don't need that. it won't work. And so I thought, maybe we are doing wrong stuff here. Maybe we have to pivot to another idea or to another platform. And that was the lowest point in building our Slack bots.
And the way that you kept going was you saw something in the bathroom there.
Yeah, that's a funny story, though. So with all those thoughts, I was feeling low at this point. With all those thoughts, I went to the men's room, and when I locked the door, I found writing at the door, "Never, ever give up." I was like, "Thanks, bro." And I decided that I will spend like maybe 6 months more to get it up and running. And maybe by coincidence, or maybe it was just something we did right after that, within a month or so, we started gaining momentum. Also, it was because we were accepted to start up Sauna Acceleration Program in Helsinki, where we did a lot of thinking, where we did a lot of talking with experts, and it helped us to craft that concept of Standupply, which we launched 2 years ago. And from that standpoint, after we launched Standupply, it just took off, and we are growing every single month, and we are growing every single month for the past year in terms of revenue. And now, when I get back to those thoughts, it's like being so far away from where we are now.
Part of the reason why you guys are doing well is you're charging. You took about 9 months to build out the product before you started charging. Then you got customers. What did you discover when you started charging?
We had to start charging earlier.
You wish you'd started charging earlier. Why?
Also, we shouldn't listen to our free users, because you know what? Many people were saying that, guys, you are building a nice to have tool. We don't want to pay for it. It's not that important. It's just a tiny bot, and we need a free version of that. So we started with a free version in beta. We got traction, we got users, but we were struggling to pull the trigger on and start charging them. And before starting charging them, we did several surveys asking how much are you ready to pay for Standup? And like 80% said nothing. Like, some people said, okay, we'll put guys $10 in your pockets. And few people said maybe $25 a month, and that's it. After we rolled out pricing, we found that it was wrong. People paid us $50 a month, $100 a month, not much, not many, but still. And those folks who are paying us, they see a lot of value, and they don't complain about it being nice to have. And if I knew that from the start, maybe we would still keep the beta free, but we would listen to those folks on free plan not so attentively.
Yeah, it's a totally different type of person, it seems like. Hey, my friend Devin just came into the room. Devin, can you move that chair out? I wasn't planning to have you in here. I want to ask you a question here in a second.
Okay.
Why don't we close it out, Alex, with you've done it after struggling in that bathroom, after struggling for years. What's the best part of getting here? Of building it to this level?
The best thing about it, it's freedom and working on the things that you believe matters. And when you talk to people, when you meet people who uses your product, for example, we were with Artem at the meetup yesterday in New York. It was just a tiny meetup with 30
of your
people.
Users?
No, it was just a meetup of
just a local meetup.
Yeah, and we found two customers there, like randomly. It's awesome when you meet people who are using your product and who believe that you are doing meaningful work. It's so inspiring.
Well, cool. Here, let me get Devin on camera. Hey, we just got a piece of mail as we're doing it. Devin, you want to come on camera and just say hi?
Yeah.
Dev, there he is.
Hey.
Hey, man.
How
are you?
Alex.
I often say in the interviews that if anyone happens to be in the area in San Francisco, they should just pop in. The office is 201 Mission Street. Devin sent me a text message and said, should I come in? I said, yeah, come on in. Devin, you've got video background. Do I look green to you, Alex? Do I look green to you today? Does that look green?
I mean, your screen is highlighted in green. So, I mean, you might be...
like, am I getting... do I look green because the background is green?
I mean, this wall is pretty gross, dude.
It is, huh? I need better better design for this.
You only put green in the background if you're going to replace the green with something else.
Oh, so what color should I paint the wall? Do you guys even hear Alex?
You're like a good... you're just a white background guy.
Really? Don't you think that's going to be too plain? Look, he's got a white background. It doesn't make him look sexy.
Yeah, but he's sitting right up against the wall. You can see a shadow. There's a crack in the corner. You got a clean white background. You got some separation.
That's it.
Andrew, this is a white wall at its core.
Regis will paint this white for me, but I always thought that white's just not going to be interesting enough. You know,
we should just Photoshop this wall in various colors and take a peek.
And just see what it looks like?
See what you look good at. It's like a... it's like going to Barney's. Seeing what your color is.
You know what I would like is to have like a... I was just at my house today talking to people, and I like how Olivia's got this like old wooden sideboard, and then we've got my whiskey collection behind me and a few other things. We've got an old typewriter there, record player. I feel like that would be a nice backdrop. What do you think of that? Yeah?
Oh yeah, definitely.
I need that, but I can't do that myself.
If you want to go above and beyond, you should definitely add some texture.
I don't know how to do that. All right. I'm glad you came in here. I wanted somebody with a professional eye to actually take a look here and give me some feedback on this. He's actually worked in real productions. All right. Alex, anyone who wants to go check you out should just go, frankly, to any place where they launch websites or talk about Slack, because chances are this freaking guy's going to be there. Or they could just go to standuplead.com. And yeah, you do have a free version still, which people can try, but they're probably going to want to take one of the better versions and use it to ask questions of their team, right? What's the number one use of the software?
It's for data stand-up meetings for remote teams. For folks who are spread all over the world, it's easier to connect using the bot than having a call every single day when it's inconvenient for someone to get on a call.
All right. And I want to thank my two sponsors for making this interview happen. And the first is activecampaign.com/mixergy. Oh, I would love to see StandUpLead do better with their email marketing. I think you guys would love ActiveCampaign. Yes. And frankly, I'm going to say you don't even need HostGator. I think HostGator is a great site for hosting, a great company for hosting most websites. It feels to me like you guys are more of the DIYers. You want the whole AWS thing. Anyone like you should probably stick with that. But if you're like me, and you want to use WordPress, you want somebody to actually make it easy for you to keep your website up, hostgator.com/mixergy. Alex, thanks so much for being here, and have a good trip back to Siberia.
Thank you. Bye-bye, cool. Guys.
Bye.
Bye. Bye, Devin.
Actually, no, Devin, I'm going to go hang out with you. Bye, everyone.
Bye.